Good evening. This is Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan coming to you at 89.9 FM on your radio dial and bringing you the news behind the news, the information that you won't get through ordinary means of communication in America today. This evening, Hour 1, Thought Control in America. Hour 2, an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, the man who assassinated President Kennedy November 22nd, 1963. You're going to hear things tonight that you're just not going to hear other places. I hope you want to stay tuned to hear the interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, something that you've never heard on the radio before. Well, this evening we're going to be talking about thought control in America and how we got into the situation we are. And we'll ask you to hold your calls. We want to give you the telephone number here unless you'd like to call in a little later. That's 464-8295, 464-8295. But to begin with, we're going to tell you about thought control in America, something which seems unreal to most Americans, and yet it influences your every action today.
The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard from corners in town. The cancer called crime in our city. An unspoken fear. On our way down. We must take the America back.
Yes, we must take America back, and we must find out, first of all, what the basis of the problem is. And the tragedy of today is most Americans really don't understand how we got to the point where we are, where America seems to be a nation on the decline. And yet most Americans love this nation. Most Americans are basically conservative. They love freedom. They want to be able to live their lives without government controlling us and regulating and regimenting us. Most people would like to get the government off of their backs and out of their pocketbooks. How did we get to where we are today? We got into the mess we are today because of thought control in America. And I'm going to tell you how it's done and who's doing it and what we therefore must do if we have any hope at all of regaining our freedom in America. Now, to understand thought control, you have to understand a little bit about how your mind, how your brain works. And the brain is built upon the same concept that a computer is, or at least the computer is built upon the same concept that your brain is. An idea fed in once into your mind is interesting. Twice, it's a coincidence. But if something is heard over and over and over again, it becomes your reality, and it becomes indelibly imprinted upon the mechanism of your mind, upon the thought process of your mind. It becomes your reality. Now, this has been known for many, many thousands of years. It was about 400 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem when a Greek philosopher was writing about what was going on in ancient Greece, as the glory that had been Greece was beginning to be destroyed. And of course, Greece was going from the democratic system that had originally existed in the city-states. The society of Greece had prospered, and it had prospered greatly. It had come to influence most of the civilized world. But at this point, as the philosopher was writing, Greece was on the road to decline. And so the philosopher, wanting to explain to the people how it all came about, wrote a story. It was basically an allegory. It was the story of a group of men and women who had been taken captive and had been taken into a gigantic cave where for an indefinite period of time they were kept in chains. Chains so that their faces were towards the wall of the cave and their backs were towards the center of that great cavern where they burned in eternal fire. Now their captors, to amuse themselves, would make shadows on the wall of the cave, and at times they would take the bust of a man, or they would create a figure. They'd place something between the fire and the wall, and those shadows projected upon the wall of the cave became the reality of the prisoners. And for all the many years that they were kept there in chains, all that they ever saw was the dancing shadows projected upon the wall of the cave. And then one day, one of their group broke loose from his chains, and he went outside. He left the cavern, and he saw reality as it really was. He saw the sun and the stars, the brooks and the trees, and he came back into the cavern to break his fellows prisoners loose. But after breaking them loose from their chains, as he tried to lead them towards the mouth of the cavern, and they saw the light, they saw reality as it really was, their eyes were blinded, and they turned back. And you see, what had happened is that for so long, their reality had been nothing more than dancing shadows on the wall of the cave. The story is called The Parable of the Cave. It was written by Plato. It is included in Plato's Republic. And yet it is true today, almost 2,400 years later, as it was when Plato wrote that story, the story of The Parable of the Cave. Because, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who are listening to our program this evening, I would like to suggest that much of your reality is simply dancing shadows that have been projected upon the wall of the cave of your mind, and that has become your reality. It was the philosopher William James who said many years ago that there is nothing so ridiculous that if said often enough, it won't come to be believed. It was Professor Goebbels, the propaganda minister of the Third Reich, who said that if you tell a big lie often enough, people will come to believe it. And tragically, that's really what's happened in America today. You have censorship, and yet most people aren't even aware of it. And to suggest that there is an organized effort to control our reality most people sort of laugh and say, you think there's a conspiracy? And I say, no, I don't think there's a conspiracy. I know there is a conspiracy, but it's far different than most people imagine, and we're going to tell you about that this evening. Now, when I first became aware of this, it was 1962. And like most of you who are listening, I was a successful young physician in Santa Cruz. I was prosperous. I had a very busy practice. There were only three orthopedic surgeons in town, and we worked from early morning until late at night. And one evening I came home. I picked up my morning newspaper. It was the San Francisco Chronicle. It was the fall of 1962, and Algeria was in the throes of a revolution. And I always had that uneasy feeling. I really didn't know who the good guys were and who the bad guys were in Algeria. I didn't understand the revolution. Was this a good revolution? Was this a bad revolution? What was the revolution really all about? I think, like most Americans, we knew something was wrong, but we didn't quite understand what it was, and we were almost afraid to ask. And you really couldn't tell from the newspapers, was this a good revolution? Was this a communist revolution? Was this an anti-communist revolution? On the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle that day, there appeared an article, and it said, Premier Ben Bella marched into Algiers today to the cheers of the throngs. And then the article described what happened as Premier Ben Bella marched into Algiers. I looked at the article. Who's Ben Bella? What does he represent? And then, shortly thereafter, I picked up a copy of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the newspaper in the town that I lived at the time, and the front page article said, Premier Ben Bella marched into Algiers today at the head of his communist-equipped troops to the cheers of the throngs. Two letters deleted from the San Francisco Chronicle article. Two letters that changed the whole meaning of the article. Indeed, Ben Bella was the communist leader, the leader of the communist revolution in Algeria, but somebody had deleted two letters from the article in the San Francisco Chronicle. That was my first glimpse, my first realization that somebody altered newspaper articles. Well, since then, of course, I've come over across thousands of articles that have been altered, and I've come to study thought control, how it's done, who's doing it, the techniques that are used. But and as we talk, perhaps we can you can all, after listening to what we're going to tell you tonight, beginning to see the techniques that are used, and used so very, very cleverly to create the dancing shadows, which becomes your reality, those dancing shadows upon the wall of the cave of your mind. Well, now, if you read your newspapers, you will very often see, if they don't like somebody, they will use many adjectives. For instance, when talking about the right wing, you talk about extremist, ultra, fascist, and of course you associate anybody on the right wing with a fascist, a fundamentalist. We call them super patriots. We call them ultras. When was the last time you heard anybody talk about left-wing extremist in the newspaper? How often was the last time you heard anybody talk about right-wing extremists? When was the last time you picked up your newspaper and you read about the 6 million people, 6 million Jews, that Hitler killed in Germany? When was the last time you picked up your newspaper and read about the 60 million people that the Soviets killed in the Soviet Union, consolidating power? Or the 80 million people that the Chinese communists killed in China, consolidating power? When was the last time? And of course, you don't read about that. You don't think about that, because your reality are simply the dancing shadows placed upon the wall of your mind. Now, very often they will place articles on a page. And if you want to create an impression, you place an article on one subject right next to an article on another. And the association of the articles in the mind of the reader, one article tends to blend on into the other. And if you're talking about right-wing extremists one place, and the next article will be on the Ku Klux Klan, and so you equate anybody on the right or immediately with the Ku Klux Klan. The use of headlines. Headlines are what you really remember. And many times the headlines have nothing to do with the subject of the article. But you see, usually the headline is burned into your subconscious. And so that's what you remember. And they use headlines very, very effectively to create an emotional reaction in the reader. And then the use of pictures. Now, if you like the man, you get a handsome picture. If you dislike the man, you get a picture with him grimacing, or his mouth open, or maybe with his hand raised up. And if he raises his hand up, he may only raise it up just instantaneously, but it makes it look like a fascist salute. Or they may come up with a clenched fist, which is the communist salute. And to the right-wingers, why the communist salute, if it's given, even though inadvertently, equates that person with communism. If it's the open hand salute, as Hitler used, why they equate that, of course, with fascism. And the leftists hate the rightists, and the rightists hate the leftists. And we are being constantly manipulated. Of course, the deletion of certain facts from newspapers, if there's an article they don't want printed, that article is totally deleted. We're going to be talking at the second hour on the JFK assassination. And as we mentioned earlier, we're going to have an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. And I hope you're going to listen to the second hour to hear that interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Let me tell you a wonderful story. There's a book. You can actually get this at your local library. It's called Plausible Denial by Mark Lane. And it is the story of a trial that was held in Florida where Mark Lane was actually able to convince a jury that the Central Intelligence Agency had been intimately involved in the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Now, articles on that trial, which was carried out over several months in Florida, articles on that trial appeared in the newspapers in Florida, but they were totally censored from the rest of the country. The book, Plausible Denial by Mark Lane, an amazing story. I'm not saying that every bit of it is true, but certainly the story of the trial is true. And when you can convince a jury that the CIA was involved in the assassination of the President of the United States, and you can censor that all across America, why, you realize the power that the media has over what the American people think. Same thing would be true of the movie JFK by Oliver Stone. Literally every means of communication every major television network, every major magazine, every major newspaper in America attacked Oliver Stone for daring to put out the movie JFK and trying, as they said, to rewrite history. Or was he rewriting history, or was he telling the truth? Well, we'll talk more about that, and as you know, later in this week, we are having Colonel X, the man who was portrayed in the film JFK, by Donald Sutherland, who sat on the park bench, a colonel who sat on the park bench with Kevin Costner, who was portraying Jim Garrison, and the colonel told Jim Garrison that there was a conspiracy in Washington, D.C., to assassinate the President of the United States, and he knew about it because he had been the chief liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA, and he had been specifically sent out of the country at that time so that he could not order additional army protection for the President of the United States, who was going into Dallas, where only a few weeks before there had been an attempted assassination of General de Gaulle. Well, later this week, you're going to have an opportunity to talk to the colonel, and he'll be with us here on Radio Liberty. We won't tell you what night. You're just going to have to listen on a regular basis if you want to hear them. But these stories are very effectively suppressed, and I could give you 1,000 stories. For instance, when was the last time you ever heard about Operation Keelhaul? Now, what was Operation Keelhaul? Well, that was the forced repatriation after the end of the Second World War of 2 million Soviet citizens and Soviet soldiers who had been taken into custody by the West. They were sent back to the Soviet Union, and they were literally all killed. They were killed, and many of them didn't want to go. There were instances where groups of men, the Cossacks, being forced to be repatriated, actually set their barracks on fire and stayed inside. They'd rather be burned alive in America than go back to the Soviet Union. There were instances where large numbers of people committed suicide, where mothers threw their children off of bridges and tried to plunge off themselves rather than be repatriated. But it's a story that's been totally eradicated from the minds of the American people. Books by Julius Epstein, Operation Keelhaul, The Secret Betrayal, I believe that was written by Tolstoy. The books are available, but nobody ever talks about it. For years, for instance, the story of the POWs we abandoned in Vietnam has been altered so that people don't know that there was no question that we left the prisoners, not in Vietnam, but in Laos, because not one man who ever went down in a plane in Laos or was captured in Laos was ever repatriated. The reason behind it was because the American government had promised to give the government of North Vietnam either $2 or $4 billion in reparations at the end of the Vietnamese War, and when Congress wouldn't go along with it, we decided to abandon the men. Now, that's well known by anybody who's ever studied the POW issue, but it has been effectively censored from the majority of the American public through the years. Yes, they simply delete situations, or they lie to the American public, and they do it on a regular basis through the newspapers and magazines, through television and radio. Now, as far as television is concerned, we talked recently about how your reality is altered. I gave one example the other evening. There was a television documentary that was put together by a Canadian firm. It was called the KGB Connection. It was the story of Alger Hiss and his Communist Party affiliations. Now, basically, they needed money, and so the American Broadcasting Company actually gave them several hundred thousand dollars so that they could actually complete this video documentary. And they came into America, they went around with a film crew, and they interviewed many of the people who had been in the various communist cells with Alger Hiss. And so, I mean, they put together this amazing documentary. When it was completed, they said, "Here it is, now when will it be shown?" And ABC laughed at them and said, "We own the rights to it, you can't show it in America." So the KGB Connection has been shown all throughout the world, but has never been released for American viewers because no one was ever to really know that Alger Hiss had been a member of the Communist Party. Why? Because he was the first acting Secretary General of the United Nations. He had been a member of the State Department. He was an official in the Council on Foreign Relations. And at the time of his ultimate arrest trial, he was the president of the Carnegie International Foundation for Peace. You can get the KGB Connection on the video. It can't be shown publicly, but you can see it in the privacy of your home. And if you're interested, you can always write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063, and we'll tell you how to get it. And remember, our telephone number here is 464-8295. If you'd like to call, later in the hour as we open up our lines. You remember it was just before the Congress of the United States was going to vote on whether or not to continue aid to the Contras. It was about 5-6 years ago. The President of the United States went to all three major networks and asked them if they would allow him to address the nation, because he wanted to try to bring pressure on Congress to vote to continue aid to the Contras, to the anti-communists in Nicaragua. Well, that wasn't the policy that the three major networks wanted followed. They wanted to cut off all aid to the Contras, and so all three major networks told the President of the United States that they would not allow him an opportunity to address the nation, and the speech that he gave was heard in no place in America. Another case in point I mentioned before, William R. Grace, the Grace Commission, commissioned by the President of the United States to study what was happening to our nation financially and to project what was going to happen if we didn't begin to bring the deficit under control. William R. Grace, about 4 years ago in 1988, was so concerned about what was happening to America as far as the devastating effect of the debt and the fact that this will ultimately destroy the nation just as surely as an atomic attack or a nuclear attack. William R. Grace, at his own expense, put together one-minute spots to be shown on television in America. And then when he had these made, and of course, let me tell you, a television spot, you can't get a good one for less than $40,000 or $50,000. And he had several of these, but he was willing to spend his money because he treasured America and our future and our heritage as much as you and I do. He went to all three major networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC, and asked them if he could buy time on the networks to show these spots to the American people to tell them where we were headed if we didn't begin to rein in debt, deficit, and the outlandish spending by our Congress. And all three major networks at that time told Mr. Grace that they would not sell him time to bring this message to the American people. And I personally called the administrative assistant to W.R. Grace back in New York City, and he confirmed the story, telling me that they had actually called a press conference and invited all the people from the media, television, radio, magazines, and that had a major press conference and put out a press release, and yet the wire services didn't carry it. Nobody carried that press release in America, because, you see, you're not supposed to understand that your reality are simply dancing shadows on the wall of the cave. The story of Vietnam. This was actually studied by the American Defense Institute. They studied what the major networks did with the story of Vietnam during the Vietnamese War, and they pointed out that nobody ever talked about winning the war. And they cataloged what was said by various people about what we should do in Vietnam. And the majority of the people said, well, we ought to continue doing what we were doing, and that is fighting a no-win war. And then there was a significant number that said we ought to pull out. Only 3% of the time did anyone advocate winning the war, and those people, and the only two people, one of them was George Wallace, and the other was General Key, both of whom had been discredited in the eyes of the American people. And so year after year, we were told we ought to either continue the no-win war or pull out, but never win. Because, you see, we never went to Vietnam to win. And we'll discuss Vietnam sometime in the near future. We'll just give that an evening, and we'll bring in some people who were there, and it will really tell you about the no-win policy in Vietnam, when a nation the size of the United States was unable to beat a nation the size of the state of Mississippi in 10 years of war. And the real reason is we didn't win is we never tried. After the fall of Cambodia, and after it became obvious that approximately 2 million people had been slaughtered in Cambodia, a man named Ernest Lefevre, who I interviewed back in 1980, told me that he had gone over all the television clippings from all three major networks over a period of year, looking at what happened in Cambodia. Now, anybody who was anybody knew that they were slaughtering 2 million people. They were frankly killing them. They'd drive them out in the woods, and they would just kill them. I mean, this was all there was. It was another example of communist brutality. And yet, going over the clips from the television over this period of time, if you took everything from all three major networks for a month, the major news broadcasts, there was less than 1 minute for all three broadcast, all three networks together, about what was happening in Cambodia presented to the American people, less than 1 minute a month. You see, that's how you control thought. Now, right now, of course, all of our attention is aimed at Somalia, and night after night we see on television the pictures of the starving children. Believe me, they're starving in the Sudan, they're starving in other places in the world, they're starving in the Kurdish villages, but we don't talk about that. Our attention is being focused on Somalia because there is a political objective and political goal, and the American public is being mobilized behind the administration's efforts to go into Somalia, and we're going in there for entirely different purposes than the American people are being allowed to know. Well, another example, those of you who listened last week will remember we had on Mr. Delmar Dennis, who'd been the man who infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan for the FBI after the three civil rights workers were murdered in Mississippi. And yet, when they put on the docudrama, Mississippi Burning, and then this was shown all across America, they never once mentioned what Mr. Dennis told us, and that was that the head of the Klan there had been trained as a communist agent, and they let it be known that the reason that they killed the three civil rights workers because they wanted to create a race war and get more government control and regulation over the South. And that was his stated purpose. This was told to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It was written in the one book that covered the his story is he's tried to tell this all across America, but nobody's ever heard it, unless those of you who listen to our program. Incidentally, all of the programs we have are taped, and anybody would like to get tapes of the programs, they are available at minimal cost, just to cover shipping and handling and the expense of reduplication. But many of the amazing stories we're putting out are available here, and you're sure not going to hear this on CBS, NBC, or ABC. There are so many examples of how the media manipulates our reality. Now, when it comes to books, that's a fascinating story. You go in the textbooks of America Today on American history and just try to find George Washington's farewell address. Now, for 180 years, every student graduating had to read George Washington's farewell address. That has simply been censored from the textbooks. Why? Because George Washington said, we don't want foreign entanglements, we don't want deficit spending, and religion and morality are the basis of a civilized society, and we must have them if we are going to be able to maintain our society. Religion and morality are the foundations of our society. That was all in George Washington's farewell address. That's why it's been censored and removed from the textbooks across America. Now, if you want to get a book printed, first of all, you send it to a publisher. Later this week, we are going to have the unique opportunity of having an interview or hearing an interview with Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton, President William Clinton's mentor when Bill Clinton was a student at Georgetown University. And Carol Quigley will tell you how he had a book. It was called The Anglo-American Establishment. He took it to 15 different publishers, and nobody would print it. Why? Because the information contained in that book was something that no one was to know. Eventually, it was published by sort of an outlaw publisher. It's distributed by people who deal in suppressed and censored books in America. But to try to get a copy of The Anglo-American Establishment, written by Carol Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is a difficult project in America today. Carol Quigley will also tell you about what happened to his major work, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Now, the book initially was very well received. It was published by Macmillan. It was, of course, immediately picked up by members of the conservative movement because Carol Quigley was talking about the secret societies that he had been studying for 30 years. Then suddenly, no more copies were available. Professor Quigley was amazed. He wanted to know why he wasn't getting his royalties. That was his real motivation. And, of course, it eventually came out the truth. The publishers at Macmillan had simply destroyed the plates. So